This is Notes from a Native Daughter. I am Sol Danela. My guest today is Zaida Adriana Gobeo Balmaceda. This lovely woman with this amazing name is a artisan, a craftsman of fashion in the realm of nature and ethical, sustainable practices. She's a potion maker, an alchemist, a color maker, and it's fascinating. And I think someone like that with that type of a life experience must have sort of a rhythm to life, a flow. It's poetic, so we're going to explore that a little bit. And I am delighted that you have given me this time, Adriana, Puerto Ricana, now based in Barcelona, and then, you know, we'll talk. Así que, Adriana, bienvenida. Thank you.
Gracias a ti por cultivar estos espacios y estas conversaciones.
So let's start with color. Last time we spoke, I asked you about like what it's like for you to like create colors, but I guess, you know, I'm jumping ahead. Like, tell me what you do. Like, you create fabrics, right?
Yeah. Well, it's transformed what I do, but I'm now more focused on creating spaces, I would say, mm-hmm. or sort of telling stories of materials and their possibilities and the experiences we can have with them,
mm-hmm.
And maybe even trying to celebrate or share a bit of my perspective or my experience of creation, of like slow and conscious or present creation, and through fabrics and textiles, since that's the medium that I feel most happy with, at least this far, or comfortable,
right? Free. But the process of creating these textiles and these fabrics is time consuming, no?
Yes. And it's a little bit, that's kind of the point. I really believe in the magic of process, mm-hmm. or the beauty that happens throughout the process.
Mm-hmm.
And the time, sort of like slow processes, when you're able to be with something for a really long time, there's a lot of beautiful things that occur there.
Like what? Like what?
Meditation, reflection, both from sort of like towards inside of you and outside of you, kind of the inner world and the outer world. So there's a lot of moment for thought. So you.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's like a journey. You're threading. I can only relate to it, you know, as you're describing it. You know, there's new coloring books that now are abound everywhere. And some of them have mandalas and like really intricate forests or sea life, or you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So I've taken to them as a way to meditate, but you know, they're so intricate, like they take so much time. I mean, I've been at some of them, you know, 8 and 9 hours, you know, straight. So I would, you know, the journey I go into is sort of what I equate to your process. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course. I think we live in a time where everything, I mean, so many things are fast and immediate and like results oriented, that for me, I mean, I've always had an interest in these, artisanal techniques or... in the things that I do, I've always been working with textiles, even since I was a child or even before I could maybe understand, like how they exist in the world or how they're seen.
Mm-hmm.
But now that maybe I've had more, I don't know, experiences being in the world and in the industry or, you know, working and kind of trying to balance life, then to me they're not only therapy, because of course if you do it more as a hobby, like that's maybe you can see it as therapy, but they're just reminders of that there's a different way to live or to slow down, to keep things that you're allowed to do things in a different rhythm, maybe.
Yeah, I get that. And, you know, so what about, so you create these textiles, but you have different products. And one of them is your clothing line.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of what you do at different points. So when you create a piece for, do you create them for an individual? Do you create them, you know, quote unquote, you know, at series, a volume, and then each of them then have carry all this time, right? All this like nurturing, meditation, creation, right?
Yeah.
Does it, and you must feel so satisfied to like hand over a piece, no?
Yes. Well, sometimes, because it's also hard to, you know, let go this thing that you've invested so much time in. So it's both ways. I think with the products or the clothing items, sometimes they're made for a specific person who maybe wants something, you know, custom made, custom size, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're maybe, since I know from the beginning that this is destined to go to X person, maybe then it's not that hard, I guess, because you're thinking about where it's going to exist afterwards and what you can give to the piece that maybe can, how do I explain, that maybe can make it, I don't know, that can be, can reach the person
mm-hmm.
that will use it,
mm-hmm.
perhaps, especially if they know the intention that you're creating with, you know, probably has more weight for them. But when I'm not making it for someone specific and I'm just, you know, maybe making things for a specific event or a specific store, and then it's a little bit of a mystery who's going to end up having this in their lives and spaces. So there it's still something that you, I mean, I invest the same, you know, energy and love, but you only hope that the people who get it can appreciate it fully. Because we all consume for very different reasons.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
There's that question.
So that's beautiful. I mean, I guess I understand. So to go back now, you mentioned before the way you grew up. And so tell me about how did you grow up?
Well,
where did you grow up?
Sure. I grew up in Puerto Rico in Bayamon,
mm-hmm.
sort of between the countryside and the city. My mother is Cuban and I grew up mostly with her and her parents, my grandparents, who I'm really, really close with.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't really have more, Cuban relatives in Puerto Rico. So it was sort of the three, you know, I mean, them three, that was the Cuban, input or heritage, like, available there.
Mm-hmm.
My dad is from Puerto Rico and he's from the countryside where I spent, my earlier years, but then they split up. So we were living in the city. And my brother, I have a younger brother and a sister. But I guess I was, mentioning that, that I was exposed to some of these crafts or techniques or maybe even approach since I was very young, because my mother and my grandmother were always inventing. I mean, they always had some kind of project, creative project, and the idea that even if they didn't, they weren't experts on something, they could master it or figure it out how to do it from scratch or with what they had available.
So you would have like arts and crafts time with them?
Yeah, maybe even more than playing with toys.
Like you guys had a whole like workshop set up, like shop class at home.
Well, I can't remember that it was like even designated time. Mm-hmm. It's more just that things were all around the house. I mean, right. They were doing little ceramic, painting ceramic houses, and then maybe they were doing needle punching or lace or whatever, and these things were around, so if you wanted to play, then
you could
all these things. Yeah, and I mean there were times when it would be more focused time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's now make cards for someone's birthday or something like this, but it was also very organic, like accessible.
Mm. That's so cool. They must be incredible people. Yeah, it was just part of the environment. They made it just part of the I understand. It was just part of your life, part of their life.
I'm very encouraged to also find new things or, I can think right now, like I had a little plastic kitchen, a pretend kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was not so much fun because I wanted to touch things. You had to imagine that there was water and beans and food and stuff. And I think for me, it was much more interesting to see how things would really happen or reacted.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, well, then go out into the backyard and pick, water and flowers and you can cook them. I mean, not with the heat, that would be dangerous, but that they would be very fine and happy about me going to play with the other stuff or figuring out a new game.
That's so cute. Yeah, and so where did you go to school? How did you learn English? All of that.
Well, I went to a private school when I was, for middle and elementary school. I went to a school called Dascalos.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mix of Montessori and I don't know what other method, but it was a little bit alternative. So that was actually very, it is the root of some other, ways of thinking because we didn't have grades or it was very much about your personal journey or like kind of they had this slogan of competir contigo mismo or como que not competing with the other students, but just with improving yourself to whatever that means. Very more individualized and a lot of play. And then when I was going to high school, I went to La Escuela Central de Artes Visuales,
mm-hmm.
which is a visual arts high school. And there I did, they have different workshops. So I was doing the illustration workshop because you have to choose like an area of focus. And that was a really interesting experience because, it's a much bigger school. It was public, but at the same time, they had the discipline of art making. So, it was different, but also really, it exposed me to things that I hadn't been exposed before. So it was great.
I see. Wow. Qué interesante. And, you've lived in Milan and, tell me about your experience living in Milan and how you got there and what kind of work did you do there?
Right. I guess I forgot to say that was in high school and then I went to college in New York.
Yeah. Fashion Institute.
Yeah, to the Fashion Institute. And that's kind of how I got to Italy because I was in New York and feeling a little bit, I had been there, I think, for 3 years
mm-hmm.
in college.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there on my own and I thought I just really wanted to leave Puerto Rico and kind of my home situation or start my life, my personal life where I had all the choices. And I went to New York and all of a sudden you have to grow up really fast. And I think for me, it wasn't even, I hadn't thought that much about what it meant to go away, mm-hmm. but I just had to do it. So, okay, now I'm here and let's deal with whatever is in front of me. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely tough and very, very fast and serious. And I don't know, I just felt like I was, I don't know, life happened so fast. And of course, I was very fascinated with everything that I was encountering. But also, there was a moment when I just couldn't maybe recognize parts of myself. I felt like I was out of touch and with myself, and I needed to, I don't know, be somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And there was an opportunity to go study abroad while still continuing the program, mm-hmm. the course of study. Mm-hmm. So that was great because I knew that I wouldn't be behind, or I was concerned about that too. So I went to Italy, and it was, I was 1 year in Florence, and then I loved it so much that I decided to stay for another year, continuing the program in Milan. Mm-hmm. And it was just really wonderful because, the rhythm of life is very different. People, or at least this is how I experienced it then, because, you know, that was what was most contrasting for me, is that, the culture was so rich, people were really doing a lot of research or investigation or reading and cultural activities, which I know now that it's not that they weren't available in New York, but I just had no time for any of that. And in Italy, you just had to stop working at a specific hour and then, well, you know, go explore the rest of, the other aspects of life, like food and, yeah, just going for walks in nature in Florence. I did that a little bit, and it was really enriching, kind of, oh, right, there's all these other facets mm-hmm. of one of you.
Right. Well, and it's in a different rhythm to life, and probably a rhythm that suits you. I mean, given what you do and the fact that you have to be in sync, or, you know, in tune, or willing to have this other slower rhythm to, right, the process of being in life. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, it's all about existing. And I think, you know, what each of us does has, you know, obviously influences us, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, it's a tricky thing to say, because it's, even with all my believing in, you know, slowness and trying to be present, and I mean, I'm very committed to doing that work and sort of practicing, you know, that's a practice. It's not easy, not because because I think that's the way. It doesn't mean that it's easy for me, but...
No, absolutely not.
Right.
Absolutely not.
I'm trying to invest more energy mm-hmm. in these ways rather than...
It must be difficult, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a paradox, I guess.
Yeah.
You know that...
Yeah, especially when you're an artist and there's, you know, you want to be seen, but you also want to be honest, mm-hmm. like, with yourself and the work.
Yeah. So, oye, one thing that I want to talk about is like the creation of colors. How do you create colors, like the reds and the yellows and the blues? Because you use all natural ingredients, right?
Yeah. Well,
primary colors first, of course. Let's start
primary
with that.
Color first. Yeah. The basics.
Yeah, the basics.
That's where we start. Like you said, I use only natural ingredients. So actually, I try to. There's just so many sources of colors, even natural ones. But I usually tend to gravitate towards things that are more specific to the place where I am.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, with red, I use achiote, anato.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that could be used is cochinillo, mm-hmm. cochinillo, but that's a bug, and It's just, it wasn't available, you know, from the place where I've been living. So I try to take things that, yeah, are more maybe familiar. So the achiote de Anatos is great. I usually buy the Anatos seeds and grind them, and then you boil them in for a while and make sort of you extract the color. And then depending on what you are dyeing, what kind of cloth or what kind of maybe yarn, and what you're using it for in the end, you can either strain the dye stuff, like the anatto seeds, and just leave the colored water and put the material in the colored water and then boil it for as long as you can. Or you can leave the dye stuff in the pot, which I tend to like because I like to see the traces of the ingredients on the final thing. So maybe like if they're anatto seeds and the yarn or the fabric touched some of them, you know, in specific areas, then you'll have like a little stain or a little mark from this. And then you can, for yellow, you can use turmeric. And blue, the most common is indigo, which is a plant, a leaf. And I've done that. I haven't like harvested the plant, which I would have loved to, but you can buy like a concentrated powder of the plant and then ferment it. And then you can dip the cloth in the fermented potion, concoction that you've made, because you fermented with oat bran or wheat bran, I think, and sugar, which can be in form of fruit peels and other strange things. There's many recipes. And then you can dip the color there. And actually, that doesn't need any heat. But you can dip the fibers in the vat. And then when you expose it to the air, like when you lift it, it is usually sort of a green, yellowish green. As oxygen comes in contact with the fibers, it starts turning blue. So it's really, wow, mesmerizing.
That's so cool.
Moment.
Wow. Like a power real.
Yes.
Something like that.
Yeah. And it's really incredibly bright. I mean, I think when I was younger, I used to do like a lot of tie dye with those RIT powder dyes. I had no clue that they were so toxic or that there were alternatives. And when I started playing with the natural dyes, you know, when you test and okay, maybe this is very light or it washes away with water, but once you get the hang of it, it's incredible, like the bright hues that you can get.
Wow,
that's how long incredible. It lasts.
Yeah, how beautiful. So, wow, thank you. That's so cool. So now I know that you're going to have a show in Puerto Rico para el museo. Tell me about that.
Yes, I'm very excited about it. It's good. Well, I won this grant called Beca Lexus, and there's two other artists and me are showing a piece at the museum. It will open in January of 2017, and I've been, this project's like a year-long project, so it's been very immersive and intense. And what else can I, it's going to be a meditation space made out of made out of a material that I create out of recycled textiles that I gather from different people that work with fabric within my community. And I've been gathering material both in Puerto Rico and here in Barcelona. And to make this sort of meditation space or area, I'm using a technique that's inspired by the lace making called soles in Puerto Rico, like a tradition of making encaje de soles, which I learned from an artisan in Puerto Rico last year. And sort of a circular process where you always well, you work radially and then you always return to the center. So it's kind of a metaphor for life and taking care of yourself. And
yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I'm excited to share it.
It's beautiful, Soles.
Yeah, and it's called Sol.
So. Mm-hmm. I know. I got it.
Yes.
So what color is this going to be?
It's actually going to be white. Mm-hmm. I'm making a yarn mm-hmm. out of these textile waste, and the yarn is different shades of white. But what I did was that I collected textile waste over maybe like 7 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought that since I'm making a type of a lace, it would be most soothing and also would allow me to celebrate like the stitches in the lace
mm-hmm.
if I just made it in a white color
mm-hmm.
rather than, you know, multicolor and then really cool, but you maybe can't see all the stitches and the work of the lace. So, yeah.
That's so beautiful. And it's going to be for the floor.
Yeah, it's going to be on the floor.
And can people sit on it?
No, I think not. It's not going to be possible because then...
Even if they take... But what if they take their shoes off?
I think it's just a little tricky with the museum, logistically, with the staff and, you know, kind of... how do I say? Like, hosting this experience.
But right.
I think maybe what I've been thinking is that perhaps I can do some like events or, you know, guided visits or something like this where we can host, you know, people and have them go through this, but with someone that's there that will tell them, hey, okay, now you take these shoes, or sort of welcome them in a more appropriate way. I don't know. It's a little tricky with, I don't know who's going to be there. It's going to be there for 3 months.
So. Right. Got it.
Yeah.
Right, the installation of it, and the upkeep and protection of the piece. I just thought it was, but okay, I got it.
Yeah.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I hope so. I was gonna mention quickly that we're making some videos
mm-hmm.
of the process.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working with a Puerto Rican cinematographer, and we're making some videos that kind of share the intimacy of the making process.
Uh-huh.
And then there's going to be one that shows, the first videos are going to be more focused on like specific stages. And then there's going to be one that's going to be like a bird's eye view
mm-hmm.
of the soil coming together.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do want people to have like a close-up opportunity or like an experience of, you know, okay, this is about slowing down and being with this thing. So I know that if everyone can't just go on it and touch it and all that, but at least there's another way, you know, for them to experience it more intimately.
I see. Yeah, that's an exploration then.
Yeah.
So now you're going to be in Barcelona through the end of the year working from there. You're going to transport this piece, or how does it work logistically in terms of production?
Yeah, well, I've been making the yarn here in Barcelona mm-hmm. and the plan as it is right now is to bring the yarn already made to Puerto Rico
mm-hmm.
and then weave the sol there. And
okay.
It's going to have a base, like traditionally the soles are made in a small cushion.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be large. So I'm sort of recreating what the small cushion would be in a large scale.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all going to be filled with textile waste that I've been collecting there.
Wow.
So that's been my...
So you have a team of people over there collecting discarded textile.
I was there last year for like 8 months and mm-hmm. I called the people that give me fabric, my parejas de desecho.
Mm-hmm.
And I had done this in New York and in Puerto Rico a little bit too whenever I went. And I just told people, you know, whenever you have stuff to throw out, just don't throw it out. Please save it for me and I'll come pick it up. But since I've been away for all this time, I've had people kind of pick it up and just drop it off at my studio, the waste. And actually there's a place in Santurce that it's like a pop-up shop place.
Mm-hmm.
And they host, there are different artists and designers who sell their books there.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been really great partners or collaborators and supportive. And they've let me have like a textile recycling station there.
Oh, wow.
All these months. So it's very centrally located. And, you know, I've sort of shared the information on the web. And whoever has any waste, you can drop it off at some thrift shop. And then I have people, my dad, pick it up and drop it off at my studio.
That's great.
Yeah, it's funny. It's been really cool to see that, how much you can do even from far away, but also it's possible because people are really generous and excited about, okay, what can I do to help you? And yeah, they're part of it. So it's great.
They believe in you because you're living the dream.
Maybe. I don't know.
Sure you are. Sure you are.
You're
creating.
Yeah, I guess. That's good.
That's very good. So what's your favorite song these days?
Ooh, favorite song.
Yeah, you know, there's always a tune for the 2016 summer, I mean, you know, for...
Ooh, I don't know. I don't have a lot of new music.
Oh, really?
The same songs I listen to from, I don't know.
Which is what? Which are what? What are those few? Duran?
No, actually, I have one that I can think about that's not that old. It's not old, but I didn't just discover it. And it's, I think it's Natalia Lafourcade.
Oh, yes.
It's like, yo te llevo dentro. I think it's called Hasta la Raíz.
Yes. That's a beautiful album.
It's joyful, but it's about your roots and, you know, not mm-hmm. forgetting. I don't know. I have, especially I listen to a recording where she does a little bit of talking in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, like, you know, no matter where we are, just don't forget about whether that's a person or a place, but whatever is a root or, you know, something that connects you. And that's nice. And then, what else?
I like that. We can keep it at Natalia Lafourcade and the root.
Yeah, it's nice.
I think it's a nice ending to, you know, talking about what you do and the root of you, you know? The little gases, you know, I guess it informs, right? A little bit of who we are.
Yeah.
And, who we are in the world. See, Kim, you make us proud.
Oh.
I look forward to seeing your piece in San Juan. I'm sure I'll get to see it because I travel there quite often. So we'll be in contact.
Yes, I hope that we can share that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for talking to me.
Thank you. Thank you again. This is great to know that these spaces and moments can exist and that we can share with other people.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Pues dale, pues hablamos en contacto.
Gracias.
Un beso. Bye.
A ti.
Thank you for listening to Notes from a Native Daughter. You can find me on SoundCloud, iTunes, or Stitcher.